Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. I'm Rob Pinier, joined once again by my good buddy Kevin Lucco. And this week, Kevin and I are honored to welcome the guy who's the hottest pitcher in the American Association right now, Kane County Cougars right-hander C.J. Eldred. C.J., thanks for joining us this week.
Hey, guys. I appreciate you having me.
Well, C.J., let's just start. Boy, you are on quite a run right now. And it looks like your season just caught fire about 6 weeks ago. Was there anything in you that kind of just all of a sudden clicked, or you felt you just had something a little different than maybe you had a little earlier in the year?
You know, to be honest with you, not really. I did change a couple very small mechanical things working with the pitching coach here with Karch, and we made a couple minor adjustments, but honestly, it wasn't anything crazy. I don't think I've been throwing the ball much different the entire year, to be honest with you. I just been having a couple things go my way, and you know, when you're throwing the ball well, you know, you can throw the ball well all you want, but ultimately you need some things to go your way, and with the defense that we have, that makes it a lot easier. And we've been scoring a bunch of runs, and you know, pitching with the lead, it's always easy, a lot easier than not. And you know, I don't feel like there's that big of a difference. Obviously, you know, the results have been a little bit different compared to earlier in the year. But I think that's just baseball too. I think sometimes there's not a true answer to things, and it that just speaks to trusting the process and trusting what you do and knowing that the results will eventually come.
I was at Northwestern Medicine Field the night the night that started your turnaround. How did it feel? 20 runs of run support. Did that help you relax you a bit and just allow you to get loose and just go at it?
That when you have 20 runs of support, that it kind of can work both ways. You can definitely relax a little bit. You feel like you got a little bit of room to not necessarily back off, but more be able to work on some things and try to figure some things out in the game, which is ultimately where you work on stuff the most. It can also be hard too when your offense is having those, you know, 20, 30 minute half innings, and you're just sitting there. It can be hard to kind of keep it locked in. But luckily, you know, I was able to keep pitching well, and you know, our offense, you never want to say no to runs. I'll happily sit there for 20, 30 minutes wait and go back out again. But yeah, when you get run support like that, it hits a whole different game.
And likewise, I caught you in your start versus Lincoln, the end of a really long and successful road trip, and it seemed like the mentality from where I was up in the press box was once Cougars got you a few runs, the feeling was like, okay, this game's over.
Yeah, you try to be the guy that can give your team that confidence, and you know, ultimately, you know, you allow yourself one run as a starter, because you know, if you can't score one run anyway, you're not going to win. But you got to allow yourself a little bit of, you know, you're going to give up runs, you're going to give up hits. It's just the reality of this game. And you know, you definitely want to be the guy when your team gives you a few runs, especially that next half inning. You want to go out there and get your defense back in there as quick as they can. That's why they call them shutdown innings. You have your offense goes out there, gives you a couple runs, you want to get them right back in it as quick as you can. And I think when you're able to do that, you just keep the momentum in your favor. You know, you want to go out there and pound the zone and throw strikes and get your half inning over with as quick as you can.
You know, you were talking a little bit about how strong defensively your team has played this year for you. And one of the things I'm kind of curious about from your perspective is that you're not putting up 12 strikeouts a night or something like that, but you're also not giving up a lot of hits. You're counting on your defense to make plays for you. Do you feel that kind of helps them to be more involved in the game when you're allowing them to have more opportunities to make plays for you?
Yeah, I think that has something to do with it. I mean, don't get me wrong. I would love to punch out 12 a game and make them sit there a little bit, but I think that definitely keeps them more involved. I think, you know, I'm out there to do two things. That's either get a swing and miss or soft contact. And, you know, obviously plays are a little easier to make when it is soft contact. But I think also as the season goes on, we have a pretty mature defense, but especially in the infield. And, you know, I get a fair amount of ground balls. And I think, you know, when our offense or when our infield sees kind of how where I give up a lot of ground balls and, you know, to left-handers or to right-handers or on certain pitches. And, you know, as the season goes on, you know, our guys kind of figure that stuff out. And whereas early in the season, you know, it's, you know, I'm new to them, they're new to me, and, you know, everybody's trying to figure everything out. You know, it's kind of the same way as a pitcher working with the catcher. The first couple times, you might not be on the same page very often. But, you know, as you work together more and more, you know, you find yourself as a pitcher shaking less, and the catcher's not guessing as much as to what you want to throw, and you just get in that groove. I think the same thing happens defensively. You know, it's just, okay, you know, we're at this count, and he's probably going to throw this, and, you know, he's probably going to hit it on the ground here, you know, and it just gives him an extra step, and our defense is really good at taking advantage of all those things. And they've been playing incredible all year. They really have been.
Now, you got that big 20-run performance, as Kevin was talking about, to start your big run here. But this is not a team scoring a lot of runs. How do you psychologically prepare for games like that when you know that, you know, three runs may be the all you're going to get out of your team on that night?
The way I look at it is it doesn't matter if our offense doesn't score runs. You know, that's not my job, and I don't have any control over that, with the exception of, you know, if I'm getting them back into the dugout quicker, I feel like, you know, they, you know, the runs come more often. If I'm making them sit out there and, you know, you're walking guys and long innings and, you know, the game kind of drag and it makes it harder to produce runs. But, you know, so as far as my job is scoring runs, you know, that's, I don't have much control over that. So I try not to focus on things that I can't control. So really, I mean, whether we're up, you know, 20 to nothing or down 2-0, you know, my job is the same, and to go out there and put up a zero in the most efficient way I can. And, you know, I think you just try to have the same mindset. I had a pitching coach tell me a long time ago that, you know, you don't ever pitch the scoreboard. And I think that's extremely, that's very true. It's, you start pitching the scoreboard, there's definitely times where the scoreboard dictates what you might throw. You might be just a little bit more aggressive in times, but that's also just paying attention to the feel of the game. Ultimately, you got to stick with your strengths and stick with who you are, and I think that's just how you try to stay locked in. It's just the same mindset every half inning, no matter what the score is. Now, you were talking about your team putting up those big, long innings and stuff like that. Do you like it when you're right back? I mean, clearly you want to get a run or two there just to make sure that, you know, you have a little leeway for yourself. But do you prefer those kind of shorter time spans between going back out for your next half inning, or are you okay with not worrying about having to be on the bench for 15, 20 minutes while your team's scoring runs? I'm okay with either. I've earlier in my career, I would have might sound weird, but I did kind of like the short, quick half innings because they just kind of got right back out there. But now, you know, being later in my career and doing this a little bit longer, it doesn't really affect me too much whether I'm sitting there for a long time or not. You know, you just try to – I try to let myself kind of mentally unlock a little bit in between each half inning. And then as soon as that half inning is pretty close to being over with, you start kind of dialing it back in. So it doesn't affect me too much either way. You know, obviously when you start getting to that 35, you know, minute mark, you know, mound visit, pitching change, you know, that can get a little bit long. But, you know, at that point, it turns into more physical than mental, really, for me. You know, you don't want to sit there and get too tight. Luckily, at home, our bullpen's right down the line, so if I have to go down and throw, you can do that. But some places don't have that. So, really, you know, from a physical standpoint, staying loose can get harder when you start getting to that 35-minute mark. But, you know, really, that doesn't happen too often. Usually you're right around that 12 to 15-minute mark at the most, I would have to imagine. Either way, you know, you're going to be loose, and you just try to mentally lock it back in when you're headed back out.
Now, you're part of a rotation that has had three All-Stars with Jack Fox, Weston Muir, and Tyler Beardsley, and Nick Belzer is a veteran of the American Association. Is there a friendly competition among you guys, or is it everybody just kind of supports each other? I mean, is there talk between guys? Do you scout the opponent and share stuff with each other?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. We're constantly in the dugout talking about, you know, how we pitch that guy or what we would throw here, you know, in certain situations. There's a little bit of competition, but it's definitely like, you know, if Beardsley goes out there and puts up seven scoreless, well, you know, I want to go out there and put up eight scoreless, you know, and if Foxy goes out there and punches a bunch of guys out, you know, then, you know, Weston's going to want to go out there and try to do the same thing, and, you know. And like you said, Belzer's been around, and he, you know, he's going to go right after him and just like we all do. And I think there's a friendly competition, but really what it is, you know, we know that, you know, being starting pitchers on the team, it's up to us, really. We set the tone for the whole game. And, you know, I think all five of us know that, and we take it seriously. And, you know, we know that if we go out there and give our team a chance to win and hopefully get our, you know, get into the sixth or seventh inning, you know, we start doing that, we score a few runs and we have the bullpen that we do, we're going to be all right.
Yeah, definitely have to feel good about that bullpen. C.J. Carter has thrown really well in the middle innings, and that 8-9 combo with Logan Nissen and Daniel Beese, that's, you got to feel as a starter, don't you, that if you get a lead into the sixth or seventh, they're going to, more about 95% of the time, lock it up for you?
Yeah, you know, it's really nice to be able to, you know, be coming out of a game and have no concern with anybody who's coming in, whether it's Richie or Keith or CJ or Logan or Bees. I mean, it doesn't matter, you know, who's coming in. You know that they're going to do their job, and they've all been really good all year. You know, that everybody has kind of their own little niche, and they got some nasty stuff, that's for sure. So it's definitely, you know, our whole team knows we get to the seventh inning with the lead, that game's pretty much over. And the best part is it doesn't even matter if there's some days where Bees and Logan are down, and, you know, we gotta go to Keith or CJ or Richie, and everybody's like, okay, well, like, they're gonna get the job done too, so it doesn't matter. So it's a good spot to be in for sure.
CJ, this is a very veteran laden lineup. You know, some of the guys are gone off that, but you guys had, you know, Pete Tosman's back, and you had Jimmy Kerrigan and things like that, but very young pitching staff. I mean, I think you're the second oldest guy on the pitching staff at just 28 years old. Does that add additional responsibility for you when you're kind of the veteran guy?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think, you know, you got to be the guy that, you know, if you're going to be the older guy, you got to be able to lead by example and not necessarily tell guys how to do stuff, but, you know, you just go about your business the right way or what you think is the right way, and you try to set a good example, and I think you do that, and everything kind of falls into place. But yeah, I think I am the second oldest, but we got a lot of great personalities in this locker room, and we got a lot of great leadership. You know, the position players, like you said, you know, that they're kind of a veteran group, and this whole clubhouse really clicks really well together. So when everybody's clicking well together and we got the good leadership that we do, It makes it fun to show up to the park every day.
I bet it also has to be inspiring to see your pitching coach go out and throw four shutout innings yesterday.
Yeah, well, you know, to be honest with you, it didn't surprise any of us. We've seen him throw some bullpens and to some live hitters, and we know the stuff he's got. I mean, he's got some nasty stuff, and you know, I think when he's healthy and he's rocking like he's starting to get there right now, he's got some nasty stuff. I mean, me and Harrison Smith, my roommate, were just talking about it, and you know, he's got a big league arm. There's no doubt about it, and hopefully he gets an opportunity to go pitch. But yeah, to be watching it, you know, it's kind of like, oh yeah, that's pretty much what we figured was going to happen.
17 games left in the season for you guys right now. Very competitive East Division. How do you see these last couple of weeks coming down for the Cougars?
I think we're in a good spot. I think we obviously got a big series coming up this week against Cleburne. They're a good ball team. It's going to be a fun six games. I think if we just focus on what we're doing and we just do what we're good at, I think we'll be all right. It's always funny how baseball works. The standings kind of tend to just work themselves out, and next thing you know, you're right where you need to be. And usually with this game, it comes down to the last couple games, and which it probably will. That's what makes it fun too. So I think we're going to be right where we need to be.
Now, you've gotten a little taste of the six-game series, being in the Royals organization. How do you like those kind of series?
To be honest with you, I'm not a huge fan. I get it with the travel, especially in affiliate ball. I get it. But I think, you know, baseball is meant to be played in three- and four-game series. But with that being said, you know, I said it earlier, don't have much control over that. You try to focus on things that you can control. So this game series are good. I think it's toughest on the bullpens because, you know, those hitters are seeing those same arms coming out more often. And, it's harder to get through six games, with the bullpen having a pitch, you know. You know, there's going to be some guys that have to throw three times in a week against the same lineup, and sometimes if they come out facing the same three or four guys all three nights, you know, that can be, it can be harder for them. But ultimately, I think, like I said, I get it with the travel, and it's probably better logistically for everybody. But I will say I'm happy that in this league we only have to do it twice with Cleburne, once at our place and once down here.
So for the pitcher that starts the game one of that series, what's the mentality of going from game one knowing that they will also pitch the series finale? Do you try to give them a different look in the second game, or you just block that out and just pitch your game?
The first game, you just focus on your thing. I'm about to throw tomorrow, so I got, they've seen me pitch before. You got to stick to your strengths more so and trust your stuff. But really, you just got to go with the flow of the game. You know, if the game's calling for certain things that you might not normally do, then that's reality. That's what the game's calling for. But, you just kind of feel out the first game. You know, you go through it, and then after the game, you look after what it is, and then you take you make up the game plan for that Sunday. So,
of your remaining 13 games, I think I said 17 earlier, but remaining 13 games, nine of those are on the road. A big stretch here that you guys have. Do you see that as an additional challenge for the club, or just another opportunity to go out there and win games?
Man, I think it's just another opportunity. I think we play pretty well on the road, to be honest with you. We, that long road trip after the All-Star break, We were able to do some damage on that trip, and I think we play well on the road. So I think we're in a good spot.
Now, CJ, I have to tell you, I just moved here to Cedar Rapids a couple years ago, and now I see you're a University of Iowa guy there for baseball. So tell me a little bit about being a Hawkeye baseball player.
Yeah, I grew up in Mount Vernon, right outside of Cedar Rapids, and
nice.
Went to University of Iowa, and it was great, great place to play, great facilities. It was nice to be close to home, but being able to be a Hawkeye, you know, that was cool. Yeah, it was a good time. Unfortunately, I was really only pitched for 1 year because I was. Had a gray shirt because of a transfer rule that unfortunately I didn't wasn't informed about until I had already transferred, and then but I had a gray shirt and I pitched, and then I got hurt my first game the next year, so unfortunately I only got to play one of my 3 years there, but that's just part of it, part of this game. But it was fun to be a Hawk.
Was Nebraska in the Big Ten at that point, so you got to play at the same place when you were playing the Salt Dogs? Was that true?
Yeah, they were in the Big Ten, but I never did go to Nebraska because both times that we traveled there was both the years that I wasn't playing. So the 1 year that I was playing when I did pitch against Nebraska was at home.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. I'm sorry, yeah. Kevin, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say we would be remiss if we didn't talk about Cal Eldred. And a little bit of trivia here, guys. I've been a Brewers fan since 1999, and the first game I ever went to at Old County Stadium, the starting pitcher for the Brewers that night was Cal Eldred.
Yeah, he threw in County Stadium quite a bit, and I was just a little guy when he was pitching there.
So, as you've gone along in your career, has Cal been there to watch you pitch and give you advice, or does he keep his distance?
He's always been a really big part of my pitching. He, growing up, obviously I was going to field with him all the time and throwing, and then he would always help out with the USSSA team that we were on, and then he helped out with the high school team there in Mount Vernon. And then when I went to college, he saw me throw a few times. Obviously, I throw with him during the off season and stuff, or during the winter and stuff, building up for the spring. And into my professional career, where obviously, you know, he was coaching for the same organization that I was playing for, but you know, other than spring training, he never saw me pitch, unless maybe some video every now and then. But he's actually seen me pitch. He saw me pitch this year for the first time since 2016. But with that being said, you know, he's obviously always paying attention, and there's always a phone call after every game, just, you know, kind of going over it. And he does his best now, especially with being able to watch the games in this league online, which is a great thing for families. But, you know, he's able to watch when he's not able to come and stuff like that. So there's always a phone call, and he's had a very, very heavy impact on my pitching career, absolutely, as you can imagine.
So besides your dad being around a lot of major leaguers and stuff like that, did you have another person that you were kind of modeled your own pitching performances after?
The first couple names that come to mind, I mean, there's a bunch of names that come to mind, but the first couple names that I really try to pitch like, one, because I really respect how they go about everything. I respect how they pitch. And when I say these names, you're going to know that obviously they have had a couple of incredible careers. But I also think my stuff is kind of similar to them. And Chris Carpenter is the first name that comes to mind. He was a big curveball guy. I have a curveball like him and a slider. And then the next guy who is kind of his, kind of a guy that followed in his footsteps is Adam Wainwright. And you think about those two careers and what those guys have done. I've watched those guys a lot. I think the way that they pitch is similar to the way that I pitch. And then after that, I get told a lot from a lot of people who have watched my dad pitch that I remind them of how he used to pitch, and I take that obviously as a huge compliment. I obviously have watched my dad pitch a lot. I've watched video, and obviously that's in the blood a little bit. But I would say, Chris Carpenter, Adam Wainwright, and then my dad. But those two guys, growing up when dad was playing for St. Louis and watching those guys, and then I think Wainwright's rookie year was my dad's last year in 05. And then watching, the career that Wainwright's put together, obviously he's still doing it. And that doesn't just happen as a fluke. You got to really know what you're doing. You got to be good at what you do to pitch in this game that long. So I would say it'd be those two guys.
I'm curious, both you and your dad are Calvin John. Why didn't you go with Junior and went with CJ instead?
Well, I am actually a junior. It's Calvin John Eldred Jr. The J stands for. Yep. So I am actually a junior. My parents didn't want to name me a junior. And then when they got to spring training, I was born in May. So they got to spring training and my dad's teammates actually talked him into it. So I was actually named by not even my parents, but they talked him into it, and they're like, "Oh, you got to do it." That's pretty cool. And then I had my first, me and my wife had our first son on October 1st of 2022. So he's not quite a year yet, but his name is Calvin John Eldred III. So we decided to keep it going, and my dad goes by Calvin with his immediate family, but then everybody else calls him Cal. I go by CJ, and then my wife and I's son is going by Calvin. So
very nice, awesome. Now Kevin and I learned a little trivia about you is that you like to bow hunt. So tell us some good information we need to learn if we wanted to take up this practice. It sounds like a good sport to learn.
Well, I tell you this, you better be ready to spend some money. That's the first thing. It's an expensive thing to get into, as my wife is learning more and more. Be ready to spend some money. But if you're looking to get into it, you want to find a buddy who does it first, and then you go with him, and then kind of dip your toe in the water and see if that's a path you want to go down. But I really enjoy it. It's somewhere to take kind of my energy and stuff during the fall and go do that during the off season, and just really relaxing to me, being able to go do something that I really enjoy and be outside and just to be a part of that. And that's something I grew up doing with my dad too. So him and I do it together all the time, but be able to have an off season, and luckily I live in Iowa, which is like one of the best places of all time to bow hunt. But lucky enough to be from there, I love to enjoy it. I love to go do it. So,
where's the best place to go in Iowa?
The best part in Iowa is southern Iowa is usually looked at it as the best place to go. Southern Iowa, south of Des Moines, southwest of Des Moines is really, really good. You can either go on public land down there. There's a good bit of public land, or you have to know somebody who's going to let you go, or you got to buy it. So that's when it starts getting really expensive, is when you go buy some land. So
tell me, biggest pet peeves that a person will do to irritate you while you're out bow hunting.
Oh man. Luckily I am fortunate enough to hunt on private ground most of the time. So nothing crazy happens. I'll say this, when you're hunting public or private land, the biggest pet peeve, and this isn't going to come to a shock to very many people, but biggest pet peeve of mine is when people come onto that property that aren't supposed to be there. And it is trespassing, and you know, it's against the law, but you have to deal with it more than you think. And that's probably my biggest pet peeve. Just people doing stuff that they know that they're not supposed to be doing, and I'd rather have to not deal with that stuff. But that's probably the biggest pet peeve.
Fantastic. Well, CJ, Kevin and I greatly appreciate you joining us here tonight, and you're a new person to us here, so you get to give us a final thought. So whatever you'd like to talk about, the floor is yours.
Oh boy. The show that you guys put together is great. I really appreciate you guys having me on it, and I think being able to do stuff, especially for this league, podcast and stuff like interviews and stuff like this is really cool. This league's ran really well. I really happy to be a part of it. The fans showing up, whole league gets a lot of fans, but especially Kane County, it's pretty incredible, to be a part of that. And like I mentioned earlier, the being able to watch the games online and stream them and honestly, the archiving is the biggest thing, because you can go back in as a player and watch and learn from your past outings, or if you're a hitter, learn from your at bat. So, those little things probably don't get talked about enough, when it comes to a league, but those little things mean a lot to a player, and I think that's why, you see a lot of guys come back to this league year after year because of things like that. So I think there's a pretty good thing going here.
Fantastic. CJ Eldred, thanks for joining Kevin and I this week.
Yeah, thanks for doing this.
I appreciate you guys having me. Thank you very much.
Well, Kevin, great having CJ on here tonight. And boy, is he on quite the hot spell right now.
No doubt about it. And I believe I've seen two, maybe three of his starts when he was just on that incredible streak where was it like 27? The 30 innings of shutout ball that he had, I mean, it's just been incredible to watch. And, you know, honestly, the talk that night, because I did the game with Tanner Hoops on the Sioux Falls Canaries broadcast network, the talk amongst the press box was, well, huge start for Eldred tonight, because if he can't get on track, I don't know what direction they're going to go with. And it was like that game was just a major springboard.
You know, the interesting thing about it is, I don't think we've seen a run like this since 2018. I'm trying to think of the Kansas City, I think it was T-Bones at that time. Tommy Collier, that's the name that popped in my head, had a huge run like that over the last couple months of the season. I don't think we've seen anything that really matched that he's at right now. It's just really a phenomenal performance that CJ's coming up with here recently.
Yeah, you hope that, maybe it gets him a look come next spring training. It's getting pretty late in the season for any signings, but you just hope that he can finish really strong and maybe a big league club will take notice and give him a shot.
Well, like we did last week, Kevin, we'll start with the team we had the guest on here from tonight, and we'll work our way down and then come back forward here. So we'll keep with Kane County right now, ninth in the rankings that you have them here right now for this week. Kane County in fourth place in the East Division. They are seven out from behind Milwaukee, but just a half game behind Lake Country for third and are a game ahead of Cleburne right now. 5-5 over the last 10. Had a very interesting week in terms of who they were playing. So took 2 out of 3 from Gary, took 2 out of 3 from Milwaukee, which is always good to be beating the team that you should be beating as well as the top team. So very successful week at Kane County, 5-2 over their last 7. So looking like they're making that push toward the end at the right time.
Yes, and the big key there is they went out and they won 2 different series and had a 4-2 week. But I just can't emphasize how big this trip is to Cleburne. And after the whole thing with Gally Cribbs motioning to the Cleburne dugout after a walk-off home run on the Saturday night game of that series, I think there's going to be a little bit of fire to that series, not to mention how hot it's going to be, literally, down in Cleburne, where we might see some tempers flare, but I can also tell you there's going to be 6 very good ball games played with huge implications on the East Division.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And what's considered, too, is that Cleburne has not been very good at home this season, 19-21 entering this week. Kane County with the 3rd best record on the road at 21-20. So it wouldn't be surprising to see this team come away with 4 or 5 victories in the series because they've been a team that's handled their business on the road and knows how to play Cleburne pretty well. So those Railroaders are going to get everything they can handle, I think, this week, especially with that pitching staff, which has been so incredible, Kevin.
To me, that's a little perplexing when you look at the home and road split for Kane County. When you figure how many people come out to that ballpark and support that team every night, you would think they would have the biggest home field advantage in the league, and that it would be just the opposite, where they would just be unbeatable at home and struggle on the road, but it's been exactly the opposite. I can't figure that one out.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, Kevin, because 3 of the 4 teams in this league right now have records under 500 at home. 3 of those are in serious playoff contention. Kane County at 9th at 22-24, Cleburne 19-21, Fargo, actually it used to be Death Valley for opponents, 20-23. Only Gary has a worse record than those opponents. You would think that those would be, having a winning home record is the key to you making the playoffs, but that has not been the success rate for at least these teams this season, and I think maybe that's why a little bit that they're on the cusp of making the playoffs, but not really locked into one of those spots.
No doubt, because what do they say? You try to win 2 out of 3 at home and go 500 on the road and you should be all right. But if one of those parts doesn't happen, it makes it a little difficult.
Well, let's jump to the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks, Kevin. 10th in the standings right now. They are 5th in the Western Division, 41-45, 8.5 out of first place, but just a half game behind the Lincoln Salt Dogs right now. A team just really, it's stunning to watch. I get that there's a ton of injuries and losses that they've had for this team this season, but it's just surprising because you started this season looking at this pitching staff and thinking, man, this starting staff is going to be untouchable. This bullpen should be as solid as all get out. But they just cannot put together 3 great starts in a series right now. Team's got to be a little worried about where they're at right now.
It's hard to think that when you look at the rotation as it's currently constructed with the Redhawks, that Colton Davis, who I don't think he's even been around for a month yet with the Redhawks, is probably your number 2 starter. So that right there should speak volumes on how the later part of the season has been on Carell Prime and Tyler Grauer. It's just been a rough go for the starting staff. And other than Elias, he was at the end of the bullpen. The bullpen just doesn't have those defined roles like it did last year. And I think that in an offense that's been besieged by injury, it's just really made it a tough go for this Red Hawks club.
You know, a guy we haven't talked very much about this season, but I want to give a little pat on the back here, too. All-star game starter for the West Division. Kevin McGovern has just, he's got to go out there as a pitching coach and try to keep this group together and getting the best efforts out of them. But he has continued to put together quite an impressive season. I mean, you expect that out of the veteran, but I think he has gone up and above. And his stats may not be as good as we've seen some previous seasons, Kevin, but I could say that this is maybe one of the best seasons we've seen out of him, just because all the duties he's got to handle, still going out there and throwing the rock.
And even more so with the way the pitching staff has been, McGovern's had to be that guy to go out there and be a stopper of sorts. You know, I saw him on a not-so-good night down in Sioux City, and a lot of nights, maybe with the rested bullpen, McGovern maybe only goes three innings, but it was a very human night also, but you could just tell McGovern was out there giving everything he had, and he did get them through five innings at least, so because he knew the bullpen was taxed, and he knew that he needed to at least go five so that the bullpen only had to throw a few innings that night. But that's just the kind of competitor Kevin McGovern is. And if you're a young pitcher on that staff, you have to be learning a ton just from the way McGovern goes out and takes care of business every time he's on the mound.
As Kevin and I are talking, Fargo losing to Kansas City tonight here 4-1. If they should drop this contest, they will have lost six straight series. Again, an unthinkable thing just a little while ago, but there we are. You know, Kevin, I think a week ago we were kind of slightly shoveling a little dirt towards the Winnipeg Gold Eyes, but after dropping the first two games against Sioux City, they take 3 out of 4 from Lincoln, grab the last game of that series against Sioux City. Suddenly, the Winnipeg Gold Eyes find themselves in at least a serious situation here of having something going on. Is there 38-49, 4 games behind Lincoln for that final playoff spot? You know, got 3 of those 4 games against Lincoln, which was huge. And is 13 games enough for them to make that ground right now, I guess is the question.
I guess I'm not sharing your enthusiasm on that one because...
Okay.
Did you say 38-49?
38-49, yes, sir. 13 games left.
Okay, and as we're recording this, they are losing 2-0 to Sioux Falls going into the last of the ninth. In my honest opinion, you're going to have to win 51, 52 games at least to make the playoffs. So the Gold Eyes have been playing better baseball, but I don't see this as a team that can run out the string the rest of the season and make the playoffs. So, like I put in the blog, let's see where they're at the end of the week. And I think as much as Greg Taggart probably doesn't want to do it, he may have to look at dealing some guys because he's got talent in that lineup. He's got talent that could bring back some much-needed help for next year. But within that, you know, you and I have often talked about on the show. Is Taggart among the managers that will be using the rest of this year to audition for a job for next year? If so, then no, he's not going to want to deal guys. He's going to want to win as many games as he can the rest of the year and say, hey, look, we got things going pretty good at the end of the year. We'll carry it into next season. So keep an eye on that as it transpires in the next week or so.
Well, speaking on that, Kevin, for a moment here, he got quite the performance out of the starting staff this week. Joey Matulovich, who was named by the league as the pitcher of the week, had a 1.50 ERA. He's looked very good over his last like 4 or 5 starts. Had one bad outing, but has looked great otherwise. Landon Barraza has pitched very well recently. Luis Ramirez, you know, is kind of up and down. So you're not exactly sure you're going to get. But you got to start to wonder, his guys are performing at the right time, that if he wanted to make a move right now, he could get some quality return, at least, you know, 4 future guys coming down the pike or something. So you got to wonder, Max Murphy, I don't think is going anywhere. I think it's safe to say that Deson Cruz is going nowhere. But I would be surprised to see him dangle Barraza out there or somebody like that looking to try to see if he could get some pieces.
Well, first of all, you read my text a little too quick today. Because the league did indeed take Seth Miller for pitcher of the week. I was suspecting that because he pitched 12 innings and had a DC area that maybe Matulovich would get pitcher of the week, but he did not. The league went with Seth Miller like we did. But to get back to your point, yeah, see, our, you know, Matulovich, Barasa, RJ Martinez threw really well tonight. Those are guys that if a team's looking to fill out a rotation or want to have a strong top three going into the playoffs, those are guys that could be pieces of for somebody else that could fetch a really nice gain for the Goldeyes.
And if a guy like Travis Seabrook is willing to go back to the bullpen, he's had a lot of success in that role. And maybe, you know, a team that's looking for that left-handed guy to work a seventh or inning or get one or two key batters out in the game, he's your guy. So see if that's willing to work out for the team. What about number 12 this week, Kevin? Is the Gary South Shore Railcats picking up the rear 36-50? We can throw dirt on them. 13.5 out, six behind King County, 6.5 out, behind King County for that final spot. And with 14 games left, that's an almost insurmountable amount of games to try to catch up, especially with Cleburne and King County being the teams to catch. So looking across this team right now, Kevin, there's a lot of talent here. I mean, if they wanted to make some moves, there's a lot of teams that would want something that Gary South Shore has to offer, you would think.
No doubt. You know, I listed four guys, Jesus Mariaga, LG Castillo, Gio Diaz, Daniel Lingua. Those are four guys right there that could give somebody a boost and then give Gary a good return for next year. Julio Vivas has turned his season around. That's a guy that could bolster someone's starting rotation. His overall numbers aren't incredible, so you might not get as much for him, but you could get a decent return, and DJ Wilkinson's been a great closer this year for the Railcats. But, boy, it was really bad timing to have a bad year because that, other than Milwaukee at the top, that East Division was there for the taking, and Gary South Shore just never got on track.
You're absolutely right about that, Kevin. And, you know, again, it's a team that you looked at when the season began, you thought, man, they've made just some very smart moves. Matt Leon looked like he was just going to be, or Leon, looked like he was just going to be so good in that closer's role for the team. He's cut by Winnipeg a week ago. Just never really got his season on track for them. And, you know, Sam Abbott was hitting 20 homers last year. He gets traded away. It's just kind of stunning.
Oh, we all love Sam Abbott.
Yeah, we did. You know, that was a huge deal, a 20-home-run season. And Gary, I mean, my God, that's like a unicorn almost. You know, it was that kind of thing. But I wonder in this trade season, I think in previous years, if we'd have seen a Gary in a season like this where they were really struggling and there's still so much young talent, I think most of those guys would have been staying. I wouldn't be surprised to see Lamar Rogers. He's not as enamored with these young guys, I think, as Greg Taggart is. Harrison Francis could be dealt somewhere. You know, this was the backbone of this rotation this season. I wouldn't be surprised to see him gone. You know, so I think this team could undergo some drastic changes at trade deadline if they really wanted to and say, hey, we're going to reload and restock for next year. We're going to come out with a brand new ball club.
You have to wonder, it's been 2 years and two losing seasons for the Railcats. Is Lamar Rogers himself on the hot seat at all? And depending on where he feels he's at, you know, if he feels like, you know, geez, 2 years, two losing seasons, I may not even be back. He might be more likely to just say, well, heck with it. I'll just unload some guys and give them a chance to play for a championship somewhere else. But, you know, just like you said with Greg Taggart, is Rogers trying to audition for his job for next season? And if so, same situation as Winnipeg, maybe he is going to keep those guys and at least try to finish strong.
Let's jump to number 8, Kevin, the Cleburne Railroaders. Battling still, trying to get that last playoff spot in the East. They are in fifth place right now at 42-45, 8 games out, 1 game behind King County. Are they playing tonight too? Let me see if that's true. No. Okay, good. So I didn't think that they were. But interesting week for them. So they lose the first two games against Chicago, then come back to battle to win both those contests, but drop the final two games of the series. And if there's one thing I think you take out of that that's a little surprising is, with the exception of a couple games, four of those games against Chicago, this team did not hit. I mean, that's kind of stunning, and I wonder if you're seeing any concern out of that.
It could be, because how many times have we talked about it where when a team is consistently hitting the ball well, but then their pitching has let them down, where the batters become a little bit disinterested, and the end result means that the batters are struggling just as the pitchers are getting it together. Maybe that's the thing we're seeing with the Railroaders right now, because they're getting decent starting performances. Jonathan Tripp, since he was acquired, he's pitching very well for the Railroaders. Casey Kalish and Kevin Hilton have both gotten on track. So, you know, you're getting decent starting pitching now, but like you said, the bats let them down a bit in that Chicago series.
Yeah, really. Had a 16-run performance in the third game of that series, had 8 runs in the first game that they wound up losing 16-8, but scored 2 in the second game loss, 4 in the victory on Friday, 3 on Saturday, 2 on Sunday. And, you know, Chicago has some solid pitching, but I don't think anybody on the staff we would go is dominant. Tyler Palm and Trevor Lane look great early on, but we're kind of, you know, getting hammered for a little while, but all of a sudden they're just shutting down Cleveland. And I was like, wow, I was kind of surprised by that. And I looked at that, Kevin, you know, you're getting Jose Saramo back, you get Ryan Hernandez back. I thought, boy, this should just be rolling right now. But you talked about 6 huge games against King County, a team that has incredible pitching. Concerning Cleveland, I would think.
I think there has to be, and there's, you know, they're teetering right on that 4th, 5th spots in the division, just like Kane County. And getting back to just talking about how big that series is, if you get like either one of those ball clubs goes 5-1 against the other, they could put the other team away very potentially.
Actually, that'd be a huge mountain to try to climb at that point. If a team lost even 4 of those 6 games, I think it's a big deal. The worst case scenario for the team trying to hang on, and both teams are trying to hang on to get down to it, the worst case scenario, I think, is to go 3-3 right now. If you drop 4 games in that, especially Cleveland, now you're 3 behind Kane County with 7 games left. And that's a lot to try to catch up on. And not everybody can be the Kansas City Monarchs trying to catch a late season buzz there to get in the playoffs. So that'd be a lot to ask. What about number 7, Kevin, the Lincoln Salt Dogs? They come in this week at 42-45. They are 8 games behind, so holding on right now to the 4th place spot, half game ahead of Fargo Moorhead. And Kevin, I looked at the standings today for a moment, and I was thinking to myself, it surprised me that Lincoln was below 500. I mean, I just thought that this team would be a little better. That by the way that they have played for most of the season, this team, I thought was like at least a few games above 500, but they just have not been able to get on that run. And I think if this team is going to have serious playoff aspirations, they got to show in these final 13 games that they can win 9 of those games or something if they're going to make a championship run.
Yes, my favorite Lincoln Enigmatics.
Yes, absolutely.
They have shown it once again. I mean, it was just a very disappointing performance over the weekend against a Winnipeg team that, like we documented earlier, doesn't have a heck of a lot to play for. That should have been a series where Lincoln could have made some noise and put themselves in a good position to get either a 2nd or 3rd in the division, but it just didn't happen. I just can't explain it. I mean, even David Holmberg, who's been incredible for them, he got hit around on his start over the weekend. So it was just a weekend. Nothing really went well for the Salt Dogs.
You have Kansas City that comes to town. You take two out of three. You travel to Fargo. You take two out of three. Then you drop three out of four at home against Winnipeg. I mean, that's just not, you know, enigmatic. That's just, what the heck? What is this? And you know, I'm sorry, Salt Dogs out there. That sounds really disrespectful, but it's like they lost five of six games to Winnipeg in the last 2 weeks. And those are games you have to win. I mean, you have to be at least 3-3, if not 4-2. You have to win those games. It's just stunning to me about this team. And I know Brett Jody's got to be shaking his head, because even when his bullpen still is, I think, is kind of a mess right now. And it's like Connor Panas has got his bat going back again. They're getting some quality production in that lineup. They just can't win games. It's a shocker, Kevin.
It doesn't make one bit of sense, because you look at early in the year, Lincoln goes to Winnipeg and sweeps. Winnipeg goes down to Lincoln, and Winnipeg gets three out of four. So the season series between the Goliaths and the Salt Dogs has just been utterly unpredictable.
You aren't kidding. It's like they play to their opponent. Now, I know that's kind of a cliche term, but well, that's the way they're looking this season.
What is it?
Good question. Good question.
And I think we're going to find out.
I'm sorry.
You know, we're going to find out a lot more about this Lincoln team, too, because this is a trying week for them. They've got first place Kansas City coming into town. But then after that, they go to Sioux Falls, and we all know how red hot the Canaries have been. So.
Yeah.
I think this week will be a test, and I think we'll know a lot more about this Lincoln club come next Monday night when we do the show.
Yeah, the very fortunate thing they've had going for them has been the struggles of the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks. You know, I mean, that has really helped to solidify this team to a better playoff position for sure. How about number five, Kevin? Oh, excuse me, number six, the Chicago Dogs. I was jumping ahead of myself out there, and I shouldn't have done that. The Chicago Dogs are in second place, 45-40 in the East Division, four games behind Milwaukee. Most important for them, four games ahead of Cleburne right now to at least keep a playoff spot. And with 15 games, they look like they're in pretty good position right now for a playoff spot. I'm going to give all credit for this, Kevin. 7-3 in their last 10. Last year in August, this team was in the tank. I mean, they couldn't win a game last year, so. Butch Hobson has got this team playing their best baseball at the right time, and that may give this team a real shot.
And, you know, that could be a thing, too, where they did learn a lesson from last year, and they are much more focused this year. And, you know, when you look at it, too, last year they were riding high in first place. This year they're chasing first, so... You know, it's a different mentality, obviously, being on top as opposed to being the pursuer. So it was a big week for them to go and get four out of six from their rivals with Cleburne. So you got to wonder, with the Dogs, is there time to make a run at first place yet?
I think that's a good question. I think it's by the way Milwaukee has played recently. They did get two out of three over the weekend, but a team that has not really looked great. Christian Young finally got out of his funk, but I like the additions, especially your guy that you're loving at the top of the order for the Dogs. Johnny Turbo has really been something special at that spot, and it looks like they're kind of, you know, excuse the pun, but I think they're kind of turbocharged with him running the offense there.
No doubt about it. I'm sure they were looking for a spark like that when they picked him up from, I believe he was in the Atlantic League to begin the season, and he has been very, well, as good as expected coming in, joining the Dogs.
We love the name. Number five, the Lake Country Dockhounds. Kevin, they are in third place in the East, 43-43, 6.5 out. Again, most important to them, a game and a half ahead of Cleburne to hold off for that final playoff spot. Lake Country, Kevin, had a what looked like it was going to be a very positive week for them, as they took three out from the Gary South Shore Railcats to extend their winning streak to four, but then lost all three of those games to Milwaukee. I think I said two out of three, but they lost all three of those games to Milwaukee. Offense just struggled mightily against the Milkmen. And so kind of hanging on right now, but, it, you know, hanging on right now looks good enough to make the playoffs.
There's a real dynamic offense, I think. You know, I was looking at their stats yesterday, and, you know, up and down that lineup, it's guys can hit, but come playoff time, can a team rely on that? I think, as we've seen in the playoffs in this league, the teams with the best pitching are going to win, and I just don't know if the Dockhounds have enough pitching right now to make that playoff run, but I've seen stranger things happen.
I think if you're Lake Country right now, your biggest concern that I have is Torres has been a complete beast in that ninth inning role. I mean, he has been absolutely spectacular for this team. And I think they've gotten a really solid performance out of Casey Porter-Real in the kind of the setup role. But getting from the sixth inning to the ninth, I'm not really sure what this team has to offer at this point. And I think that's the biggest concern they have to have, because, you know, a lot of times we watched in the playoffs last year, Kevin, there were so many incredible rallies in those final three innings of playoff games that led to a team winning a game or even advancing on a series. And I think if you don't have a seventh and eighth guy you can count on, you're in a lot of trouble. And that's where I think the Dockhounds may have a serious Achilles heel.
Yes, I think it's that starting pitching that's going to have to step up, because there's just not a lot of arms that are positioned to get you from the pitching to a really good closer. And that, you know, then that's the thing too, where Cleburne or Lake Country could go out and look for some arms and maybe do some scouting, find an arm in someone's bullpen that's being underutilized, take a chance on them. And because I think that's right now, that's their only weakness is pitching. Other than that, I think it's a very, very good ball club.
Yeah, Travis Seabrook working in that seventh inning for this team may be a key, or even a Chris Irwin going back to the bullpen, and Gary coming to Lake Country that way might help that team out. So we'll be looking at that. They should be pretty active over the next 7 days here. How about the Sioux City Explorers, Kevin, coming in number four in the rankings, 45-41, 4.5 out. Doesn't look like they're going to catch those Kansas City Monarchs, but look pretty solid into the second position in this division right now. And I'm gonna say this, Kevin, before the season began, I made the point, because Sioux City lost a huge amount of talent to the Mexican leagues, and then a couple guys also transferred back to affiliate ball. I've seen a lot of great Steve Montgomery performances. I got to tell you, this ranks up there in the top one or two. That this team is where they are is really kind of shocking to me.
Well, yeah, look at the statistics for this team. There's really, outside of Matt Floyd, there's really not a lot of guys that stand out as having, like, wow seasons. But yet, it seems like they get the clutch hit at the right time, pitching more times than not have kept them in ball games, and now they get a boost with John Nogalski coming back from the Mexican League. You have to wonder, I know Steve Montgomery is very loyal to his position players, but could he be looking to bring in another bat or two just to try to give that pitching staff a few more runs to work with? Because right now it seems there's not a ton of nights where the Explorers are winning 11-2. Usually it seems like they're very close games, and that's because, let's face it, the Explorers offense, just they're not going to have a lot of series where they're going to score like 26 runs in three games. It's going to be very tight scoring games. So, but, you know, credit Steve Montgomery for keeping a team focused that is maybe lacking a bit offensively, and he's managed to get the most out of the guys. Are we talking potential manager of the year?
Go ahead. I said at the beginning of this, before the season even began, if this team finished in second in this division after all the losses he had before the season even began, that he was manager of the year. And I'm sticking with that right now, because I'm unbelievably impressed with the fact that this team is where they are right now. And as you mentioned, Kevin, it's the way that they're winning. 8-2 in doubleheaders. You know, that's not very easy. 6-4 in extra inning games. Okay? This club is 17-17 in one-run games. You may say, that's not a great record, but 34 one-run games. That's a lot of very close contests to the team. They're constantly in these close battles, and they're coming away more often with the victory than the loss out of that kind of stuff. And you look at that and you go, well, that's the reason they're winning games. And that's playoff baseball. That's why I think you feel pretty good about it.
No doubt, because that will have them the most battle-tested when it comes to playoff time.
Now, I know that Steve Montgomery just threw his phone down and slammed it after you and I said that, so feeling like we just cursed him right there. So, but, man, I mean, 29-14 when they 29-14 when they score first in games, 33-12 when they score last. So they're putting teams away. I think says a lot there too. 5-4 in 2-run games, 7-7 in 3-run games, and just a team that's constantly in those close games. And I think, man, come playoff time, everybody's going to hate facing the 6-2 sport. And you talked about, Kevin, you got three quality starters, and that's really all you need to go all the way.
That is true, because in a three-game series, you can line your best three up, and I think their top three match very well with anyone else's top three in that division.
And that's the key, I think. In that division, that's all they have to do, is just be a little bit better than those guys, and I think that they're going to be in great shape. So, again, sorry, Steve, if we're giving you too much credit this week. How about number three, the team we're starting to love here, Kevin, those Sioux Falls Canaries, 44-43, 8-2 in their last 10. They are 6 out of first place, 2.5 ahead of Fargo-Moorhead for fourth place, so that's the most important thing right there, and 6 out behind Kansas City. Man, great pitching performances. Well, some of us start with Seth Miller, chosen as the pitcher of the week by both us and the American Association after a phenomenal 3-hit shutout this last week. And doing it at home, that's I think, the biggest deal of all, Kevin.
Yeah, well, I mean, what a story. You know, when we talked to C.J. Eldred, you know, on that night when they beat Sioux Falls 20-1, there was a losing pitcher that night, and that losing pitcher was Seth Miller, who gave up 8 or 9 runs in 2 1/3 innings of work. And it was a night where Miller was auditioning, should we say, for a spot in the rotation. Well, he was not on that night, but Mike Meyer gave him another chance. And ever since that bad night, Miller's been lights out. And I know we just talked about Montgomery for potential manager of the year, but boy, I think Mike Meyer's going to be garnering some attention on those ballots also.
I think you're absolutely right. And you know, I'm going to say this, they come away with an 8-game winning streak, okay, entering this week. And you and I said, wow, well, now we're going to see what this team's about. They have to go to Kansas City, and then they come home to face Sioux City. So, you know, two of the toughest opponents they're going to face for the rest of the season. I mean, probably maybe the two toughest opponents they're going to face. They lose that first game against Kansas City, battle back to come away with two great pitching performances, to come away with victories to close out that series, then come away with two outstanding pitching performances to close out that series against Sioux City. And I'm thinking, wow. And tonight they get a 2-0 shutout. All of a sudden, pitching in Sioux Falls, Kevin, this team could be a lot more dangerous. And I always thought they were pretty good, but man, this team is really doing something special, I think.
We expected it from Akeem Bostic when he came in, and he's had a very solid season. Ty Culbreth just struggled mightily. I know a lot of us are wondering, boy, how long can you stick with them? But Culbreth has rewarded the Canaries for their faith in him, and with Seth Miller doing what he did. Even Neil Lang was getting clobbered badly. He went to the bullpen. seems to have found something there. Came back in rotation and thrown well there. But, you know, this could be a team that they could probably use one more starter. And another thing, they was a tough injury on Saturday night to Wyatt Ulrich, who had a collision as he was crossing first base. And although nobody ever really came out and said it officially, it looked like a concussion for Ulrich, and he has not played since. That particular injury necessitated a trade where the Canaries did acquire Aaron Whitefield from the Kansas City Monarchs, and Whitefield is now playing center field. But you hope that somehow Ulrich can get back into the lineup, because he's such a spark plug for this team that you hate to have him on the sidelines, especially if the Canaries do indeed make the playoffs. You know, he's someone that has stuck with the organization through some pretty lean years, so you'd like to see him get rewarded by getting to play playoff baseball for his ball club.
Yeah, and a guy can bat just about anywhere in the lineup, and has batted just about anywhere in the lineup for them season other than third or fourth. They let him swing away, and he's been a big key to them. You know, Kevin, another guy on that team who's battled through some very lean years, but deserving some MVP talk, is Mike Hart, named by us as the Player of the Week. The league chose Cody Bohanic as the American Association Player of the Week, but we thought Mike Hart was really the guy. 429 batting average, 4 homers, 7 RBI this week, and set a single-season high for himself with 21 homers when he homered twice yesterday, 20 doubles this season, 304 batting average, 53 runs, and 57 RBI. I mean, this guy has always been kind of a solid player, but wow, what a phenomenal year this season.
All in the meanwhile, breaking the league record for most times hit by a pitch. So he's
27.
Been putting up big numbers and has been using up a lot of ice bags. So, yeah, it's been a great year for Hart.
You know, there was a TV show. You're probably old enough to remember it. I cannot remember who what the show was or whatever, but some guy thought he was going to get huge on baseball trading cards, because he had the guy who had been beamed the most times in his career. I was heading toward the record for the most beaming in his career, and he gets nailed like the next to last time that he would have tied the record, and then decided to retire. I can't think what show that was from, Kevin, but that could be Mike Hart this year. So, 27.
Yeah, you have me stumped on that one. So.
Oh, man, look at that. I finally had an old TV show reference that I stumped Kevin on. Milwaukee Milkmen, Kevin, they are still holding on in the first spot in the East Division, even though the Chicago Dogs are nipping at their heels right now. 50-37, they on a 3-game winning streak, kind of got a little bit out of their doldrums, got the pitching staff back in order. You talked a little bit, Kevin, about how Chicago looked like they were kind of playing out the season because they had such a huge lead. I kind of wonder, maybe Milwaukee lost their focus for 10 days or 12 days, but now we're at playoff time, and they're like, okay, we need to get back to business.
Yeah, that was a huge, huge weekend sweep that they had of their rival Lake Country Dockhounds, because not only did that put the Dockhounds in the rearview mirror, it also sent a message to the rest of the league, too, that the Milkmen are not ready to relinquish that first spot, even with Chicago only 3.5 games out. So, and I imagine it's got to be a big confidence, too, for Anthony Perone's crew.
One guy that we're just, you know, a personal favorite here at the show for Kevin and myself, because we've known him a really long time. Ryan Zimmerman up tied for the league lead in victories with 9 right now. Two guys on Milwaukee each have 9 victories to this club right now, with Gregory Vasquez also having that mark. And Zimmerman, though, Kevin, just the guy's, I think, like 30 now, but looking better than I think we've ever seen in pitch. I mean, this guy's really having quite a year.
Well, it's different now. He's a veteran on this ball club and a veteran of the league. He's no longer just a guy that came out of a Division III baseball college to have some success. You know, he's earned his stripes in this league, and within that, he also has been given more expectations, and he's lived up to them, and it's been a really nice story for Zimmerman this year.
We should mention that Brian Torres has easily blown away the American Association record for stolen bases. It was Alvaro Rendon, and I think in 2018, who had 62. Torres up to 68 right now with 13 games left to play for Milwaukee. Does he get 80, Kevin? 80 stolen bases in a 100-game season?
Well, you know, you can never rule it out. I really, in my opinion, I don't know why there aren't more big numbers like that in the stolen base department, because there's not a ton of catchers out there that are guys that you absolutely cannot run on, especially in this league. So I'm surprised that there hasn't been a guy out there that stole 80. If that's something Torres wanted to do, I wouldn't count him out for being able to get it done.
So here's a American Association true or false for you this week, Kevin. We're going to give you, because this is a stat that I saw a few days ago, and I was waiting to save it here for tonight. Aaron Hill, I think this is a phenomenal stat. 27 for 27 in stolen bases. That's a lot of stolen bases, first of all, but never caught. Does he remain? He's going to get at least a few more. He's going to risk it, but I'm thinking he's going for 30. But does he get caught this season, in the regular season?
Well, your guess is as good, if not better than mine, but I would say he will likely probably stay perfect, because he's obviously got something good going right now, and he's got a good read on what pitcher's moves, and obviously he has the speed to go with it.
I like that answer. All right, we'll go with that. Fantastic. Let's close it out, Kevin, with the top team in the standings this week, the Kansas City Monarchs, who also have holding on the tiebreaker? Yeah, they are still by .01 over Milwaukee. 49-36 with 15 games left. I think one of their games has been officially canceled, if I'm not wrong about that. But technically 49-36 right now, as they are holding a 4.5 game edge over the Sioux City Explorers. And just as you look down the stretch here, Kevin, they got some decent enough pitching out of this week, had some solid performances for them as well. I feel like Kansas City is this team right now that's just saying to themselves, hey, look, let's just play Kansas City baseball. You know, what Joe Castelpietro expects of us, kind of thing. Just get good enough pitching for us to just make sure we're in a good, solid position to have that home field advantage, and then we're going to be okay after that. And they're getting great performances out of guys like Justin Wiley, and Chris Herrmann continues to rock this season for them. So I really see this team as still the team to beat in the West right now.
They are, but I don't think they're unbeatable. You know, I look at the pitching, and Jalen Miller has been very good for them. But outside of Miller, Zach Matson's been okay. Dalton Moulton has just been okay. With Brandon Finnegan, the guy that, with a major league pedigree, has got you 6 wins, but his ERA is at 4.8. There's no, you know, brought his name up earlier. There's no Tommy Collier-like guy in this rotation. Jalen Miller's been all right, but ERA's closing in on 4. So I think in a 3-game series with Kansas City, you can find a way to outpitch them. You've got a chance to beat this ball club.
Yeah, I think the other thing, you know, kind of referencing Lake Country for a minute too, Kevin, and I think even worse is that I still am not really sure who's closing out. Who you can go in and go, this guy's coming on and it's over. You know, I feel like there is no guy that you would say, would dominate the ninth inning for this team. And I think that makes this team vulnerable as well. Clearly, they've shown that they can figure out ways to win games. But we saw last year, Fargo was able to kind of eclipse on their bullpen and wound up coming away with that champ, you know, moving on to win the championship. And I wonder if this team is really no different than that team. It's still the same Achilles heel right now. So does Joe Calfapietra go out there and look at a G.J. Wilkinson or, you know, somebody like that to try to bolster up his bullpen or find that Alex Valdez like he did late last season, hoping that's the guy who closes out the pen for him?
It's funny because he just stole my next thought right out of my mouth there because I was
thinking
about how he was not afraid late in the year to go out and find somebody else to be his closer. And you know, I watched Weigl pitch last week, and boy, I mean, he was like homelessness in San Francisco. It was all over the place, and didn't look like a guy to me that I would trust in the ninth inning right now. So, you know, we brought his name up before, DJ Wilkinson and Gary. There could be a real bidding war out for him because I think Kansas City would also be a team that would be very interested in picking him up. Unless we see that Bubby Rossman can be the guy for them as he has been so far. But, you know, he's only appeared in five games, less than five innings, a lot of strikeouts. But let's see a bigger body of work from Bubby Rossman before we start crowning him as a potential savior in the ninth inning spot for this club.
Yeah, you know, Kevin, I just think it's ironic because last year they were trying to figure out between Jameson McGrain and Brandon Cook, and I think there was even somebody else who was in the mix that last year, and I feel like this team is in the exact same spot this year. And, you know, there's no Matt Hall going out there to throw seven shutout innings for you every night. So maybe there is some serious problems for this club. Well, we're going to find out. We're going to see what they try to address that over the next 5-6 days. So, should be an interesting one for sure. Well, Kevin, let's see if there was any other news around the American Association. We talked about both the player and pitcher of the week, both coming from the Sioux Falls Canaries. That's two straight weeks Sioux Falls had the pitcher of the week. So, man, they're getting some pitching out there, and we're really liking that so far. It's looking like a pretty good thing. But as we're down to these last 2.5 weeks here, Kevin, who kind of stands out to you right now as your MVP? Because there's a lot of guys out there having some pretty solid seasons. And who really kind of leads up to you right now?
Well, we could be seeing an Andre Dawson situation where a last-place team could be bringing an MVP candidate, and it would be a Dale Murphy-like situation where it would be 2 years in a row. I'm talking about Max Murphy of the Winnipeg Goldeyes, because really, I would hate to see where this Goldeyes team would be without him.
Yeah, I can see that. And leading the league in RBI and home runs, as Kevin and I are talking here tonight, 26 homers, 81 RBI, three ahead of Chris Herman for RBI, and three ahead of Jose Sermo, who was gone for a couple weeks but has worked himself into second place still in the home run race right now. I think kind of Sermo and Alexander cross each other out. Some would see both those. If you're looking at one other candidate beyond – actually, two other candidates beyond Murphy. I think you're looking at Josh Altman and Mike Hart. Both those guys are having seasons for teams that are, you know, in solid playoff position because of those two are having a key part of them. So I could see that one out there. I'll jump out of pitcher
Brian
first.
Torres either. Brian yes, Torres, I think you throw in that mix too.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right, because even when the team has struggled, he has continually produced and helped them to garner enough runs. And again, at 68 stolen bases, that I know that stolen that number, that stat doesn't stand out to people like it should, but that's a lot of stolen bases. Yeah, I mean, come on, 68 stolen bases in 83 games. And if you think about that in a major league season, if you doubled that, he'd end up like Ricky Henderson numbers. I mean, that's just absurd. We're talking about that. So, I'll throw a pitcher out first tonight here, Kevin. Let's see. Pitcher of the year so far that I would say. Man, that's a tough call. Gregory Vasquez, I guess, is the guy that really leaps out of me right now, Kevin.
Yeah, he does. I, you know, and he didn't even spend like the one third of his appearances this season have been out of the bullpen. But he's racked up 9 wins. Would have been 10 if some people didn't notice a box score that was a little bit off. But
sorry, Gregory.
Hey, you know, sometimes you got to do the Lord's work.
That's right, exactly.
I would just say, you know, the whole package of wins, ERA, strikeouts, you got to go with Salmon Bates of Sioux City.
Yeah.
9 wins.
That's a legitimate
119 lineup. Strikeouts at a 3.6 ERA.
Yeah, his numbers have been impressive. So, and I think both of us are looking around at Manager of the Year and thinking right at the moment it's kind of a Montgomery-Meyer battle. Great performances. Brett Jody's done a great job. You can't take anything away from the incredible job there for the Lake Country Dockhounds. Ken, why am I missing the name?
Ken Huckabee.
Ken Huckabee. I wanted to say that. I didn't believe that was the name. God, I'm sorry, Ken. You can't deny the job he has done. He turned around a club in a very difficult situation and has them they're looking to make the playoffs for the first time in franchise history. So there's been a lot of incredible performances this year, but wow, Meyer and Montgomery have set the standard, I think. So one of those guys is probably getting it right now.
Yeah, it's going to be a very interesting vote, I think. Because, you know, all three guys you mentioned, all of them have a very solid case for getting it.
Yeah. And I think there's going to be two cities that are going to walk away going, hey, our manager got shafted. And they have a legitimate argument to make, you know. And it's going to be quite fun for sure. Well, let us talk about stuff around the remaining leagues out there. We'll begin in the Frontier League. As the league names Noah Myers from the Evansville Otters as the player of the week after hitting 3 homers, driving in 11 and scoring 10 runs with a 571 on base percentage. I guess they didn't decide his batting average was worth mentioning, but okay. So he's player of the week. Carter Spivey from the Florence Yalls. I always like mentioning that name. As the pitcher of the week, 13.2 shutout innings, 1 walk, 12 strikeouts. That's a pretty impressive performance there for Carter, so congratulations to him out there. League standings quickly, Kevin, out there in the front of the league. The Gateway Grizzlies leading by 2 games over the Schaumburg Boomers as they are also down to their last 8 games of the season. Because I think they play a 96-game season? Maybe they have 13 games. Yeah, 96 games. My bad. And then in the East, the New Jersey Jackals hold a half-game lead, thanks to a nice 6-game winning streak by the club, holding a half-game lead over Quebec for the final, or for the top spot in the East Division. I'll be honest with you, Kevin, I'm not exactly sure how their playoffs work. I'm assuming it's the top 4 teams in each division wind up advancing to the playoffs. But 16 teams, I wonder if the American Association tries to shoot for that in the offseason. And the Atlantic League, Kevin. The always fun Atlantic League. The Lancaster Barnstormers are leading the North Division in the first half with a 1-game edge over Southern Maryland and Staten Island. Staten Island finally into something here. And the South Division High Point Rockers are 2 games ahead of Gastonia. I'm sorry I cut you off, Kevin, about the Frontier League.
Oh, well, you said about expanding to 16 teams. That would be awfully ambitious to bring in 4 teams, and, you know, then that's between the teams, 96 players you got to go get. I don't see that much expansion happening that quick.
I think you are very wise in determining that. I think we're going to probably see 2 next year, but that might be as good as it as it gets for us here. I think that runs us through the American Association, Kevin, but of course, most importantly, there, tell us a little bit about what's going on out there at the 10th inning stretch.
Well, you know, I did the Sunday Notebook and the power rankings, and mind you, this is my level of devotion to the bit. I did not go to my 35th, 35-year class, high school class reunion until all the games in the association were wrapped up on Saturday night. When I did get there, and I really didn't find anyone I was interested in talking to because I crashed the thing. I had no name tag on. Most people didn't know me from anyone else. I sat at a table, went on my phone, and started editing the power rankings, factoring in the results from Saturday night. Well, now I'm wishing I had an editor because, you know, when we were going through the power rankings tonight, I noticed that I had listed Lake Country a couple times. I moved them in the standings, but did not. I did a copy and paste, but I should have done a cut. So they were listed twice in the rankings. I had Milwaukee spelled wrong. So a future shout-out is going to be whoever volunteers to become my full-time editor, if they can accept the job without any pay. But 10th inning stretch, as it is, if you're in a town ball and to my town ball team, you're going to be hopefully entertained the next couple weeks as my local town ball team begins its quest for state championship of the game next Sunday afternoon at 4:30. Other than that,
outstanding.
Other than that, you'll have the Sunday Insider and the power rankings going on.
Outstanding. Shout outs here tonight. I guess I'll go first here. How about tonight? So my shout out, Kevin, is, and this has nothing to do with player and pitcher of the week or anything like that. My shout out is just to the Sioux Falls Canaries because this is the, other than the pandemic year, we're not usually watching Sioux Falls in August and talking about playoff baseball. As a matter of fact, I don't think, since I've been covering American Association baseball since 2014, okay, if you take out 2020, I don't think I've ever been talking about Sioux Falls Canaries making the playoffs in August. So this is exciting to me. I'm loving this. The Sioux Falls is a great place. Love going there. Fantastic stadium. I don't care what anybody says. I love the Birdcage. Great community, and I'm loving this. So shout out to you fans out there. You're getting a great performance and loving the way the Canaries are playing.
My shout out this week is to the Kane County Cougars organization as they packed 10,161 fans into Northwest Medicine Field on Saturday night. That is incredible. Those are numbers we rarely even saw in St. Paul during their heyday. So that is, it just shows you that after what could have been a very disappointing time in Kane County baseball history when they did lose their major league affiliation with the Diamondbacks, they could have sulked about it. They could have even have gone down to college summer Wood Bat League with the Prospect League or Northwoods League. But instead, they proved that they are a professional baseball town and have gotten behind the Kane County Cougars and have become, as far as being able to get people to come out to the ballpark, the class of the American Association.
Absolutely. And if you have not been out to Kane County, fans, it is a beautiful ballpark that everything around it is done very well and great experience. So travel around a little bit, learn about the other stadiums out there. That's definitely the way to do it. I think that closes up for tonight, Kevin. Shout outs, rankings, news around the league. You couldn't ask for much more than that.
We had it all.
That's what I'm talking about. Well, Kevin and I once again want to thank CJ Eldred for joining us this week. Calvin John Eldred for joining us. Kevin and I will be back next week. So for Kevin Lucco, I'm Rob Panier. We'll see you next time on This Week in the Association.